Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of the Mundane Festival podcast. I am your host, Chris Lamberth. Today is Sunday, July 21st, 2019. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and on Podbean, the host site. If you like this show, please rate and review it on Apple Podcasts and or Stitcher. Give it a five-star review. Let everyone know why you like it, because it will make me feel good about myself and most of the life decisions that I've made so far. You can email the show at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. Let me know what's on your mind. More importantly, what's on your heart. You can like the show on Facebook. You can follow it on Twitter at Mundane Festival. And you can follow me, your host, the guy talking to you right now, on Twitter at Chris Lamberth. This is episode 363. I have a super special return guest, my good buddy, comedian and filmmaker Jeff Cerulli. He's got a new film coming out called Tasteless. I saw it. It's great. It's a great documentary. And you can see it next month on demand and wherever you stream movies and all that good stuff. He'll give you the details, and I'll share the link with you when that time comes. And I'm going to share the conversation with you, my conversation with Jeff, with you in a bit. But I'm going to talk to you for several moments while before that. So it's Sunday. It's early. It's really hot. I've been away from you all for a couple of weeks. My apologies, but I've been really busy working on stuff behind the scenes, trying to make things happen, moving and shaking, auditioning, all this stuff. And I want to do this podcast as much as I can. And I want to do it when I'm compelled to talk to you, because I want to give you a shitty free content. So this is me making the effort to not give you shitty free content. So it's been a busy 2 weeks. I got to see Van Hunt live again at the City Winery in New York City. And this was my first time being in there for being in the main room. I got to see Nicolay in the loft area, which he crushed. Nicolay in the Hot at Nights. And I had a ticket last winter to see Rachel Yamagata earlier this year. And I was too much of a scaredy cat to go into the city into the snow and see her show. And now that I look back, I should have went to the fucking show. But whatever. So it's my first time being in the main room at the City Winery, and it's fucking beautiful. It's a really nice place to go and hear some music from one of your favorite artists, or any artist of that matter. It's great. It's a great place to go see and hear some music, right? Okay. So I had gotten a ticket, and he had two openers, this band called the Katie out of Cleveland, and they were cool. They rocked out. They're like a three-piece band, had one singer. I think it was three-piece. Are they three-piece? Look up the Katie on Instagram and YouTube. Google them. Listen to them. Like them. Follow their stuff. And then another singer, songwriter, Andy Allo opened for him, and she was great too. She's a beautiful girl, beautiful, super talented. I think she worked with Prince. Amazing voice, really, really good. And then Van Hunt came, and he was just by himself, and he was just at the height of his powers. Like, he leveled the place. He did a cover of How Do You Want It and mixed it into one of his songs. Nicely, they had like a medley that featured How Do You Want It. And he crushed, man. It was so amazing. It was cool to see him in Easton a few months back in March and just see like a nice, intimate, like VH, what is it? What is it? MTV storytellers. What do you call the MTV, like a really cool, chill vibe. And we talked about it when he was on the show. It was like really nice, intimate, and it was great, but it was great for another reason as opposed to this one where he just kinda he rocked out. And it was so cool. And I saw him briefly after the show. I was like, oh man, Chris Lambert, he did my podcast. He said, oh man. And he hugged me and everything. And he's like, oh, I should have got you up there to tell some jokes. And I was like, nope. And that's all right. I'm not going to ruin it. Music and comedy usually don't go well with each other. I always listen to podcasts and have comedians just talk about a lot of times when comedians talk about bad sets, it's usually when they're opening for a band, and there's certain things that have to be right. A lot of things that have to be right in order for that to really go well, or for you to have a fighting chance. Like even like legendary comics talking about opening for people. I think Brad Garrett had something that he talked about. It's a couple comics that I've heard just a lot. Like to talk about just not having great experiences opening for musicians. But I was thankful that, because I had thanked Van Hunt for doing the pod like maybe a couple days after I posted it. He's like, oh man, yeah, it was great. I had a good time too. You know, maybe when I'm in town, you can do some jokes and we'll do something together. I was like, I would have been ready to do it, but it was better that I not ruin your show, buddy. So that was awesome. I'm trying to think of some other stuff. I've just been auditioning and trying to work on my craft, doing the TPS reports by day, all of that good stuff. Just been doing shows. I had this show down in Newtown, Pennsylvania last weekend, which was fun. Like I just opened for Larry XL. If you're a Three Guys On podcast listener, you know he's a friend of the Three Guys On podcast. So it was cool to meet him. And then they did like this double headliner show with Larry XL and Kevin Downey Jr., who I had opened for in New Year's Eve. I opened for him. And it was cool. I just did like 20 minutes in front of those dudes and brought them up. And it was a nice little excursion to Bucks County, Pennsylvania. I didn't know that was Bucks County. Every time I'm going down 95, I see escape from Buck to Bucks County, Pennsylvania. I didn't know that until one of my buddies mentioned that. I was like, oh, I would have done more down there. I was gonna see a movie, but I didn't. Ended up not doing. I ended up just saying, look, I'm just gonna take a nap, so I'll be ready for this show, so I'll have all my I'll be on my P's and Q's. Happy Comic-Con to all the nerds. All the nerds doing the Lord's work, where closeted nerds, like I'm not really, if I'm doing a podcast, I can't be a closeted nerd and I post the action figures that I get on my Instagram. I just got a Black Lightning action figure. I thought that was cool because it's like the TV show actor. It's Cress Williams on there. And I got like a couple Marvel Legends, Spider-Man Far From Home. I'm a nerd, but thank you to the nerds for doing the good work and posting stuff from Comic-Con and all the cool shit that's happening with Marvel. That looks like it's going to be fun. Looks like most of it's going to happen next year. Mahershala Ali playing Blade, a Marvel character that's not going to die. I mean, because he was so good in Luke Cage, and like after he died, the show was kind of like, it's fine. It's a fine show. I watched all of it. I think that is it. I'll probably I'm doing some. I owe you Patreon folks some stuff, and I'm gonna give it to you. Don't worry. There's stuff coming. So I'm gonna bring it to Jeff. So this over the last couple days, there's been some drama in the comedy scene. And Jeff and I recorded yesterday around 11 o'clock. And when I turned on Twitter, I saw a couple tweets from people about defending comic Dina Hashem, who's a New Jersey comic, and she's doing her thing. And Comedy Central has this show called This Weekend Comedy that they do at the Cellar, and it's comics and New York based comics doing sets and talking about current events, basically. And apparently, and Dina had a joke about it was really a Venmo joke that was about that mentioned a rapper named XXX Tentacion, who was murdered, tragically murdered, and a lot of people were upset about that, that he died. Obviously, rapper, you know, got killed earlier, I think earlier this year or last year. Oh my God, let me see. Let me look this up, because let me have all my facts, because I'm 39, and his music is not in my demographic, so I want to make sure I have. So he was murdered last year, June 18th, 2018. All right. So she makes this joke, and it got pulled. It's basically a joke about Venmo. And she meshed those two together. And the joke was mainly about Venmo. Then another comic, a comedian named James Davis, who is a comic that had a special on Comedy Central earlier this year. And now he's hosting, I believe, a show that's on Netflix, a game show. And then he kind of lashed out at Dina. And then people apparently, I don't know everything, but apparently from what I gathered from various sources, that he said something on Twitter and lashed out against Dina, and now people that are affiliated with XXX Tentacion are upset at Dina and have throwing death threats at her and trying to getting her mother's address. And it's a big shitstorm. And the thing that's disheartening, one, death threats to another person, especially a kind and nice person. I'm not trying to make, no way trying to make this about me, but I know Dean is just a person, a comic that's on the scene, very funny. I tried to get her on the podcast. Dina, come on the show. And really thought she was really funny. I remember working with her a few times, and she's doing her thing. Like, she's a comic that's on the rise. She's been on Conan, very funny, and not really trying to hurt anybody. And then these people are coming at her, after her, for her just telling a joke, and it's bullshit. And for another comic to lash out and start this shitstorm, it's really fucked up. And if you're somebody in that position, One is a thing that, and Jeff and I kind of touched on it, but it's one thing that, you know, and his documentary basically deals with some of this too. A lot of people on the internet just really hate women, and they use whatever situation they can or any type of thing to just bash women, and it's not sound like a fucking it's not cool. It's not. And there's a lot of anger, a lot of that incel shit that's happened, like the Bagel Boss guy that went crazy. Now he's kind of got a career. I tweeted this, guys, that he's going to book JFL. He's going to book Just for Laughs. And he's on, you know, Sam Sam and Jim. Yeah, Sam and Jim. He did an hour with them, and he's on TV shows and podcasts, and he's killing it. He's getting his 15 minutes of fame. And that outburst is really about his disdain for women, the way women have treated. Hey, look, I've been hurt by women before. But you still got to press on. You still got to keep going. And I've had success with women. I've failed more times than I've had success. But you just keep trying to live your life and keep pl- plugging away, and you remember the good times you had with those ladies, and you try to find some new experiences with new people. I think there's somebody out there for everybody. But you can't, it's just wrong, because it's fucked up, and it's fucked up for another comic when you're trying to say, when you're trying, you're out there. You know, I had this, I guess, I'm trying to remember if I talked, I did talk to Jeff. Jeff and I did talk about this, but even before, like, you want to, as a comic, you want to entertain people, and people come out, the people that come to comedy clubs, most of them are the people, they want to have a good time. They want you to say things. They want you to say things that they're afraid to say, that you, they want you to say things that make them laugh. And us doing the work, this is the only one of the very few crafts in the performing arts that you need an audience. And sometimes you fail in front of an audience in order to find the shit that works. And I, cause I'm a theater, you guys know this. If you listen to the show long enough, you know that I'm a theater guy, and that's how I came up. And you work for a while when you start a play, a production, you're working on rehearsal, you're blocking, you're making choices, and you say, oh, that doesn't work, got to try this. So you fail in a safe space. Like, you're failing and succeeding in a safe space until previews, and then you whittle it down and you make decisions, and you decide on decisions with the director and your other cast members, and you try to put out the best thing you can, and then sometimes you tinker with that, and then you're running the show and everybody's watching you and they critique it. But stand-up's not like that. Stand-up, you work it out at an open mic. You work it out at a bar show. Then they say, hey, I want you to do this show. I'm paying you $500, and I want you to do this show this weekend. And then that's when the joke's supposed to be ready. Hopefully, you know what I mean? And that's usually how it works. And there's, you know, I talked about a show with Jeff, and it gets there in the conversation where you're talking, you're working on jokes, you know it works, and you're taking it around in different areas of the city, different areas in the tri-state area, all around, and you're getting a reaction, and you're trying to figure it out. So Dina is very smart, somebody that really that I know that works on her craft, and she's not out there to hurt anybody. And I think it's wrong. Obviously, it's wrong for the death threats and looking for her mom's address and find all that shit. It's really disheartening and sad. And it makes me angry. And what makes me even more angry is the fact that, you know, you have another comic, a comic of that has stature, a comic that has something, you know, more than what Dina has. Dina's trying to come up, and then eventually her management, what I'm hearing, her management had to make sure the clip was pulled because of all this drama, because of another comic who's already had way more success is saying something against this younger comic. It's really fucking disheartening. Like, you know, show business is hard enough when one of your own, we're supposed to be a united front when it comes to saying what you believe your truth is, or saying, telling jokes. Like, there's comedians that have jokes that you don't like. It's like, I don't like that joke. But it's not like, you don't have to go into, I don't like this joke. And, you know, you're just like, not my cup of tea. I like that comic. That joke's not the best. And just leave it at that. But you don't have to go on Twitter and talk about that shit. That's Bush League, man. And for it to get out of proportion, for people to blow this out of proportion to the extent of motherfuckers calling it death threats on a comic, and a woman at that, and a woman of color, is some bullshit, man. And it's fucked up. But on a lighter note, I hope this passes. I hope this passes. I hope that nobody gets hurt, and I hope people are we can move on, and all parties involved will be unscathed by this. And on that note, so I just thought I'd address that, because as we were recording, we were finding a couple things out. Like before our session ended, we found a couple things out, and you know, I would be remiss if I didn't address it, you know, from my perch of a podcast with a few hundred listeners. So yeah, I hope, sorry for the delay in episodes. I hope everybody is having a great summer. Hope you have a great and safe Comic-Con, and I'll talk to you next time. And here is my conversation with the great Jeff Cerulli. That vibe there. All right, here we go. So you're a new dog dad.
I know. That's been taking up a lot of my time. I got a dog, yeah.
How's that going?
Oh, it's the best. I don't think you're not like really a dog guy, right?
I don't like animals.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the best, man. I always wanted a dog, but it's a puppy, so it's taken up not a lot of my time, but it's just like you have to tire it out, otherwise it's insane.
Yeah.
You have to tire it out twice a day, otherwise he's just a monster.
And is this dog a rescue?
Yeah, it was from a shelter.
Did you go? You went overseas for it?
It's from Belize. Yeah, we were in Belize, and then we took him back.
Is that like a sanctuary for dogs?
Yeah, it was like an animal shelter with like dogs and cats, and we took one home.
I have a lady that works with me that does that. She goes maybe a couple times a year. And
Puerto Rico?
No, to I think Belize.
Oh wow!
Or somewhere overseas, and I think it is. She goes somewhere overseas and looks after dogs and helps people and stuff.
It's great, man.
Yeah, it's pretty neat.
What do you got against dogs?
I don't have much. They ruined Michael Vick's career.
Yeah, those damn dogs. It was too tempting.
Yeah. No, I don't have anything against them. I think I like them at a distance. You know, yeah. I don't have any hate for them. If I see a dog and one of my friends has one, I'll pet it. You know, I'll appreciate the adorableness of a dog. I don't really hate animals. I hope I don't get canceled for this episode.
Did you see this Dina Hashem thing that's going on right now?
Dina Hashem?
She made a joke, and then I was on Comedy Central, and then people got mad. Did you see this?
No, I thought there was... Okay, what happened?
So she did a joke. I kind of knew fucking people were going to get pissed, and it was like... It was about that rapper. I don't even know how to say his name. X-Tenation, is that?
X-X-X-Tentacion?
That's it, yeah. I mean, okay. Good for her for even doing this joke that you have to say his name right.
Yeah.
And she talked about how he died with so much cash in his car.
Yeah, okay.
And she's like, just use Venmo. That was basically the joke. It wasn't like he died. It was a funny joke. It was like, I think that was a big advertisement for Venmo. Great.
Okay.
And then it was on the Week at the Cellar commercial, and I saw it and I knew. I'm like, that fucking, because like rappers like that, like young rappers, they have like such insane fans. You know?
People love. Yeah.
So it doesn't matter what she said. It's just that she made a joke about him. How dare she? So people like got really pissed and I think like Comedy Central pulled the clip. And I don't know this James Davis. Do you know this comic, the Hood Adjacent guy?
I know of him. I've seen his special. And you're clearing up a lot of shit for me right now, because when I turned on Twitter, I saw Corinne Fisher was like, you're calling out somebody. And I tried to look it up. What happened?
I think he took that down. But apparently I think he posted probably, how could you make that joke? Blah, 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 blah. And which is weird for a comic to do. And then, I think that's where we're at. I think he took that down, though, because I didn't see anything from him. I don't know him, and I didn't see anything from him. So I think he took it down. Maybe he realized,
Oh, yeah, I'm calling out another comedian for making a joke.
Because, they'll come back to you. Like, what are you doing? It's going to, at some point, he's popular. He's yeah. going to say something that people are going to get pissed. And then isn't it the same thing? Well, it's like, you know, eventually if you get big enough in your comic, the mob will come for you eventually.
Right, right. Okay, so that's what it was. Okay, so some people had death threats on Dina because Dina made a joke. And then...
Yeah, okay. I think that guy James was like, oh, she made a joke that I didn't like. She's probably, you know, you can... Yeah. I don't know what he said, but you can speculate that it was probably like it was too soon. The guy died, blah, 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 and, you know, whatever.
Well, I mean, that guy... I mean, that dude
didn't
had
seem
a lot.
Like a good guy, by all means. Right?
He did not seem like a good guy, but it's not the he shouldn't be, you know, he shouldn't be dead just because he wasn't a good, you know, it's a lot of shit that comes up. And it's like,
well, people also don't care about that. Whether yeah. you're good or not. If you have fans, right. people will defend you.
It's like this cat, ASAP Rocky, who when he
he's in Sweden.
Yeah,
but it looked like that those two guys were fucking with him, right?
Yeah, I think they were, and then they beat their him and his crew or something beat the
good.
Other.
Good for them. I mean, it's not good he's in jail, but if those guys like it looked to me like they were following him around, they were like stop following us around, and they kept doing it, then they should get their fucking asses kicked. But unfortunately, he's in jail. That's why you just can't do that stuff. But it's like. You know, if they're fucking with him, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I saw where his prison sentence got extended or something. I guess Trump was trying to help him out. It's just a lot mm-hmm. of shit that, like, and because the reason why people, why Black Twitter is upset is because there's, he said some shit, like, when Michael Brown got killed in Ferguson and all that stuff was going on, he said, you know, I don't care about that and blah, blah.
Kind of like distanced himself from like everything.
Yeah, he was really dismissive of it, and now he's in jail, and now people are like, "Well, that's what you get." And then the people that are like happy that this guy's in jail, that's kind of shitty too. It's just like, no, yeah. two wrongs don't make a right. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, one has nothing to do with the other. I mean, yeah. you know, that's. I mean, that's an unfortunate thing. That's like. I don't know if you're just going to, I don't know. I mean, it's like that Lepitard clip that was going around yesterday was good. That yeah. it was like, hey man, it's not political to call people out on being racist. It's not. And it right. should be discussed. And it shouldn't be like to call the president out because his speech was racist, which it was. It obviously
of
was.
Of course. Yeah.
You're singling out, you know, minority women. It's no coincidence. He does it all the time. And he didn't stop the chance. And in fact, he made the statement that was like, well, I sped up quickly, and then he took that back, which it wasn't even serious what he was saying.
Yeah.
So to just call it out, it's not political. It's just calling out what it is that he's inciting, basically riots, like between races of these angry white people that are his fans. That they just, you know, I think some of them just like the spectacle of it, but some of them take it seriously, and yeah. you know, you can't fuck around like that.
No, you can't. I mean, he knows what he's doing. No,
yeah,
he doesn't care at all.
He's not stupid. Yeah, it's not going to affect him, but it's like it will affect people. I mean, there was that white guy that punched the black guy at the rally, and it's like he's just like, oh, I didn't like what he was doing, and it's like he gets shit like that.
Yeah,
you're fanning the flames here.
Yeah, he knows what he's doing, and it's
of course
that whole thing with Dina. I didn't even know that was a Dina joke, and Dina is very funny.
Dina's very funny. Yeah.
Yeah. Shout out to Jersey Comics. Dina, come on the show. she's very funny. And, you know, that's what we do. Like, I was having this conversation with somebody the other day. I mean, we get paid to go and do this high wire act. Sometimes we're successful. Sometimes we're not. But, I mean, we are shooting for that. Pursuit of saying when people go into a club, we're saying things that people are afraid to say, or people are thinking, but they're afraid to say it, or they don't know how to word it to make it funny. That's what people pay for. Like, that's the kind of comic that I want to be. I'm working towards being somebody that is going to, that people are going to put money down for, and like they get babysitters for and shit. Like,
yeah,
that's,
I mean. You have a joke, the Walk to Remember joke. Very
I do.
Funny.
Oh,
but someone
yeah.
could get upset at that because you're talking about cancer, and someone could say, oh, my blah, blah, blah died of cancer. You know what
yeah.
I mean? It's like, that's like, but that's not the point of the joke. That's like
yeah.
with the buzzwords where people get upset because you're just speaking about cancer, and how dare you?
Yeah.
And it's like, you know. It's a lot of making it about yourself.
Yeah, it's an interesting time. I mean, I was doing a show. I did Phoebe Robinson's show in Brooklyn at the Union Hall a couple weeks ago. And I was working on some material that, I'll preface it by saying that I'm not the type of comic that's like, I'm edgy. You can't even say what you want to say anymore. Like, I'm not that dude. I've never been that dude. But I'm going to try to push some buttons. I think with what I do, like, there's been a lot of, when I say something, I put a lot of thought into it. And I'm going to try to walk people through those thoughts and make it funny. Like, I'm deciding what's funny, and I'm going to walk you through that. Most of the time, in the 10 years I've been doing it, most of the times I've been successful. Sometimes I'm not. I'm what you would say, shit, the 300 hitter. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so when you get the reaction from that type of crowd, from that Brooklyn crowd, it's like, are you fucking kidding me? These jokes, like, these jokes work in clubs. These jokes work in, like, different places. And then all of a sudden in Brooklyn, you guys are trying to outwoke each other in a fucking room after I've listened to another comic talking about taking a shit. using a bidet. But, like, I'm trying to make some social commentary and your assholes tighten up. It's been like that. There's a YouTube clip of me from like 6 years ago talking about movies. It's called Chris Lambert Geeks Out About Movies. And I'm doing like a 13-minute set at Union Hall talking about movies, but it's like my stand up talking about movies, basically. And I linked all this stuff together. And I noticed, like, how just they... I was like, come on, guys. You got to... I was like, loosen your assholes up. I think I say that in that set. I'm like, loosen your assholes up.
What didn't they take to?
I had a joke about The Great Gatsby. Was that the Leo DiCaprio version of it?
Mm-hmm.
And I said how, like, Jay-Z was on the soundtrack. And that movie took place during the 20s. And Jay-Z could never get into any of those parties unless he was serving shit, unless he was like a butler.
So everyone was like, oh.
They're like, oh. And then I said, oh, what's next? He's going to come out. They're going to do the Anne Frank movie, and he's going to do the, like, soundtrack, like Star of David Swagger, Holocaust Hideout, or something like that. And then they got, like, I was like, come on, guys. Jesus Christ. It's a joke, but, you know, I'm not trying to, it's what frustrates me is, like, I'm not that dude that's like, free speech, you try fucking taking it away from us, fucking, I'm not that dude.
There's a clear distinction, dude. There's a clear distinction between someone who makes a joke that's thought out that you don't like, and someone who's just doing, like, edgy shit to be edgy.
Yeah.
And there's always a clear distinction between that. You can tell. And I don't know. Are people really getting upset, or are they just doing it for likes and clicks? I don't think it's a coincidence that people get more upset now than they did, because, you know, they can make it about themselves and draw attention. And, you know, I wrote this story and check this out. And, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's no coincidence. So, you know,
as far as the
Gatsby movie, I thought it was so goofy. The words on the screen and the hip hop soundtrack.
Yeah.
It was so goofy, that movie, that remake.
Because I had a moment like that this week where I was working at the Empire Casino and I was hosting and it's fine. And then, like, all of a sudden this couple walks out, like, maybe the show had been going on for an hour plus, and they come by me and say, oh, we like the show, but this guy's going too far. We have a kid with mental issues, like Down syndrome or something. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay. But they didn't have to say anything. They could have just left.
They said it about you?
Not about me, about another comic. And I was like, oh, okay.
He's making a lot of Down syndrome jokes.
I don't know what, I don't remember, but I think he might have said something. We have a kid with special needs and all of that stuff. And, you know, I don't know. It's, I've been, like, some people have tried to say stuff, like, if you mention cancer, you know, like the one, I remember one time I was opening for Trevor Noah and somebody, I said something about cancer, but cancer wasn't the punchline.
Yeah.
And after the show, like I was talking to some friends and then somebody came up to me, an audience member. It was a white woman, a young white woman. She was drunk and she said,
they often make it about themselves.
Yeah. And she's like, you said cancer. I said, oh yeah, well, I wasn't saying anything bad about cancer. My mother had it, you know, so yeah, I'm not.
Everyone is dealt with it.
Yeah.
At this point, you're not special. Everyone has fucking dealt with it. So for you to complain about that, it's like everybody's dealt with it.
Yeah.
There's no chance that anyone has not dealt with that. Everyone has a family, a friend, or somebody who's had it. It's too common for it to be like this thing of like, don't mention it. It's like, it's crazy, man. It's crazy that like people feel so empowered to like get up and just like, if you want to leave, yeah, leave,
just leave,
whatever.
Yeah.
But to like, you know, it's that Yelp need. It's that need to like complain and shut down your business. And like, I'm not happy until,
yeah,
you know, you can't do this anymore. I remember one time at a show, I mean, I'm not an edgy comic either. And someone put a note to the manager booker and was like, Jeff made it hard for us to enjoy the show. He was like offensive. And I was like, what did I, like, I'm not edgy at all. I'm not, you know, she's like, the other comics are great, but he made the show hard to enjoy. And I was like, whatever. I mean, I don't know. I hope you feel good about this, you know, that you just, you know, that you got your complaint in, that whatever I said offended you.
It's like, you could talk about all different types of people, all races. And then you get to the one thing that
yeah,
touches them. And it's like, fuck.
Uh-huh.
Or you don't have the sense of humor to laugh at yourself or to acknowledge something. It's,
yeah, but I've heard the other side of the coin, which is interesting, about like sometimes like disabled people, they want to be made fun of because they want to be treated like everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't want to be treated with kid gloves. Now, obviously, that's not everyone.
Right, right.
But that's certainly an interesting component, too, where it's like, you know, just because a guy's in a wheelchair, it's like, he wants to be treated like everyone else. And so, you know, there's no one way to handle everything.
Yeah, that's true. And you can't please everybody. And I think I even said during that set, I said, you guys are, I haven't listened. It's been about 2 weeks. I haven't listened back to that set. I remember calling them. I was so mad. I got through the set and I ended up, you know, I did well, but it made my work harder because I want to do an album this year and I'm trying to work the material and you're making it harder for me if I have to keep stopping and telling you like, hey guys, this is, I'm trying to get you guys through this because there's a punchline at the end that you would probably enjoy if you just like shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
You know, and it, you know, it happens in certain places where it's like, even at Gotham, even in the when you're doing the Vintage Lounge where people are just like, oh, I was like, look, you can either laugh or not. So I know this joke works if I'm hearing you laugh or if it doesn't. Like, I have a bit about like that's like something, this is too inside baseball, but fuck it. We're talking about it. Where you like, you talk about like a hot girl and you see that she's hot and you look like a celebrity and you, mm-hmm, look her up on Wikipedia to make sure she's illegal. So, mm-hmm, you don't feel creepy for, and
yeah.
I said I had made that reference on stage during that show and they were like, oh, I was like, what the fuck is wrong with that? I looked her up to see if,
yeah,
it was okay. She's 22. She's,
yeah,
legal. So why are you like, shut the fuck up?
Just the idea. It's just the idea of it that it's like you're making a joke even about like the way Hollywood like makes like young girls, they sexualize them so much that it blurs the line between a girl that's 14 and 19, you know?
Yeah.
Sometimes you can't tell. So you want to be on the safe side. So your joke is more about that. So for people to groan, it's like you're doing the work here.
That's so funny.
You're doing the research.
That's another layer to the bit. I'm doing the work, folks.
Yeah.
I'm,
yeah,
checking it, it's out like, and it's okay. But
I went to the library.
I don't know, man. It's just making us hard, making it harder for us to do our fucking jobs.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. That's something that I haven't done an episode in a couple weeks, so it's just like I'm like getting it all out now. But it is just like, and I've bitched to some friends about it too. But like, yeah, it's just, and then you go do another show somewhere. Like I was in Newtown, Pennsylvania last weekend, and it was fine. Like they're like, oh my God, you're so funny, like that, you know, blah blah blah. I don't know, but
But isn't that what's kind of great about comedy?
Oh yeah,
that it's like it can no two sets are the same. It's yeah. like it's, and then it's also those sets where like if you kill, but then everybody else kills, you're like, well, the audience was really good, you know.
Yeah.
It's the biggest telling for me is always like if the audience is like okay, and you get them.
Yeah,
and you're like okay, at least I have a skill here.
Right,
that I can take an okay audience and do stuff with it.
Right, and what was interesting to me was like it was fun because like some of those bits, like the newer bits that I've been working on, I did them at Levity Live, and that's like a general audience. You know, I'm opening for somebody, but that general audience is who I want to attract, like who I want to appeal to, and if my sensibilities are like getting a mainstream audience, black, white, old, young, getting them to like get on board. That was like, okay, all right. Cause eventually the goal is you want to play these, you want to headline these clubs in the shopping mall. Like that for me, it is.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just like, okay, well, I know I'm on to something, but it, you know, it's just the nature of the fucking game. And it is the fun part to see how they like, fuck, that worked in a club where something you think like you make references to like the fucking Transformers and you know, like maybe that does just work in at a bar show in Brooklyn. But if you can take that and make it palatable to Levity Live or the Richmond Funny Bone, then it's like, oh, okay, maybe this is working.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and there's also jokes that like work every time, and then you tell it doesn't work, and you're like,
right,
come on.
Yeah.
Come on. This works every time, except with you guys. Come on.
Yeah. So I'm always like, I always find it fun to do that room. Every time Phoebe asked me or somebody asked me to perform there, I will not say no to it, you know?
Yeah, it's a great room.
Yeah, I love that room. I thought about, like, I always had it in my head, like, I wanted to do an album there.
The album there?
Because I saw Mark Maron record his there, but I think we'll probably have another venue in mind. But
did we talk about the Duplex?
We did, yeah.
Yeah, that's a great venue for albums.
Yeah, I went to Katie Compa's a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And, God, it was maybe a couple months ago now. We'll see. She killed it. It was great. But we'll see what happens. We shall see. But enough about me. Let's talk about you, Jeff. Let's talk about the cool shit that you got going on.
Are we recording?
We're recording. Yeah, we're recording, man. I want to talk about your movie.
Well, it gets into a lot of the stuff we just talked about.
Yeah, let's talk about it. Tasteless. I just saw it maybe a month or two ago, and it's great because it kind of starts out. You explain your film.
Well, it's called Tasteless. It's coming out next month. I sent you a private screener.
Yes, yes.
Like a real boy.
Yeah.
I sent you a private screener. Yeah, it's coming out. We're excited. We don't know exactly where yet.
Okay.
Hopefully find out this week, but it's going to be out 8/27. It's also coming on DVD, which is pretty fun.
Yeah.
You know, so it's about this old joke book called Truly Tasteless Jokes from when I was a kid, when we were kids. And it turns out this like feminist wrote it. This mm-hmm. was, you wouldn't think if you saw her career now, she speaks a lot against anti-ageism and she has a TED talk, and you wouldn't think that she wrote these dirty joke books that nobody really knew who wrote. It was written under a pen name. So we thought it'd be an interesting idea to do a doc on that. And if we're going to do a doc on that, I kind of wanted to get into what's going on now. Look at these jokes. Not that like to look back like, well, these jokes were so amazing, because they're not. They're terrible. But to look back at these jokes at a time where we are now and kind of like the outrage and the consequence of telling a joke. And we have a guy in the film who's in Canada who told a joke about a boy who is a famous boy. It's not like a random boy. And he got sued and he actually lost. Mm. And I mean, that's a different case. That's Canada. But it still kind of sums up where we're at of people.
Yeah.
Are you really getting upset? Are you upset? Are you doing it for likes and clicks? And, you know, I think it moves pretty well, and it gets into kind of that, where we're at, where we're going. And I'm glad you liked it. I'm glad you saw it. And hopefully people enjoy it. They watch it probably about a month from now. So
that's August cool.
27th.
And what kind of comics did you have on there?
We had a bunch. I mean, we kind of ran the gamut. We had like Jim Norton, Roy Wood Jr., Jordan Carlos, Mark Norman, Soder. I mean, it has a ton of comics in it. And this author, Wayne Gladstone, is in it, who's really thoughtful. Aston Applewhite, the lady who wrote the books, is in it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's got kind of a mix of a lot of different people.
I really liked how going into it, like, you know, you have an idea that it's going to be about these joke books, but then the turn that it makes, it's like, oh, that's really it. That's, wow. I really like that, because I kind of, even though it's in the about section of the film's website, it's still kind of a nice narrative touch that I appreciated with that.
Yeah, it just kind of flows to from these books and who wrote this, and then to where we're at with, like, you know, it's kind of the idea of satire is getting lost, because you should. Justin says it really well in the film, where it's like, he's like, you could not be black and watch black shows and take something from it. Now you have to be smart enough to know what's real, what's not.
Mm-hmm.
And we're losing that by just getting upset instead of realizing it's satire. Or, you know, I don't think it's that we're stupid, or I think it's that thing of outrage and clicks that we do know, but it's like, I want to show you that I'm upset. I want to gather my base, you know? It was like, I think about, like, when the girl got upset at Colbert.
Yeah, right.
She's genuinely upset, okay, but she did cancel Colbert, and it was like, this is a guy who's, like, he's fighting the good fight. He's fighting for the right thing. So it's like, you may not like his joke, but why do we have to cancel him? Now, of course, if you pull back into the layer, she got, like, death threats, and what happened to her was terrible. But on the surface, the cancel culture, it's ridiculous. You can come out, hey, I don't like that he's able to make an Asian joke. Why are we able to make Asian jokes over any other joke? Okay, sure, we can have that conversation. But it's not that. It's that you have to go, no, he needs to be canceled. We got to cancel him. So it's that kind of nature now. And, you know, it's talked about how comedy, like we were just saying, it's a live art form. Like, it changes. Like, you're watching someone's, like, you know, polishing their act and working on jokes, like, they're not going to work sometimes. You might go too far, but that's how you find it. So if you just get upset at comics, you're losing that art form, or just getting upset at buzzwords. You know, like we talked about the Dina thing. It's like, she's not saying, ha ha, this rapper died. She's making a joke about, you know, hey, you should be careful with money, et cetera, blah, blah, blah. But you're just getting upset at how dare she mention him, you know?
Yeah.
And that's kind of where we're at.
And then another comic trying to cancel.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I didn't see it, so I don't know. It's just what I read. So.
I don't know what he said either, but that's the first thing that when I turned on Twitter, I was like, what's going on? every day. Like, every day it's something new. Wasn't there a little controversy with one of your first doc, Hungry, like ESPN made a 30 for 30?
Well, I mean, look, I mean, so I did a doc, Hungry, about competitive eating in 2013.
Mm-hmm.
And throughout the whole process, the Shea brothers, who own Major League Eating and run the sport, they wanted no part of us. They wouldn't talk to us. ESPN had nothing to do with us. So we kind of made our own thing, and it was kind of punk rock. And we talked to, you know, as many eaters as we could, and we followed Kobayashi around. And we got into Kobayashi versus Joey, and you know, the film came out, it got picked up, it was on Amazon, it was on Hulu, it's still on Amazon.
Wasn't it on SI too?
It's there too, yeah, it's on Sports Illustrated on demand.
Yeah.
And then I saw that ESPN and the Shea Brothers made this film that is kind of like kind of what we're doing, which was Joey versus Kobe in the history, but it was kind of like their version of it. So it was kind of more of a corporate version of it. And our doc was very critical of the Shea brothers, and theirs was not really, because they're partners with them, so they can only be so critical. They got into about how the contracts are a little tight, and with Kobayashi, and there's a contract dispute, and blah, blah, blah. But it didn't really get into how they act as the Eater's managers and agents. So it's like they kind of block them from earning, you know, as much money as they could. And it's like such a limiting thing to begin with anyway. So to see that, it was a little disappointing that it was like, hey, we just did this. You're doing the corporate version of it. But they certainly have a right to. I think the director is a fucking hack for doing this.
Mm-hmm.
I think she knew about our film, and she still did it anyway. And it was very similar. Now, again, I watched the film. Theirs was very much into the world of just Joey Kobe, where ours was more about the world of eating, and it had the story of Kobe and Joey. So ours is different, but I don't know. To me, I'm like, I wouldn't have done that if I was her. If I saw 5 years ago, there's a doc that they haven't faced since our doc, right?
Yeah.
They haven't eaten against each other. There's nothing new there. You know, like there's nothing they haven't faced since then that I was like, well, the story hasn't changed.
Like
I think for Kobayashi, he was more emotional in this, and I think years have passed and he felt more comfortable talking. So I think it was good for him. I had no hate for him or Maggie for doing it.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, good for them. They opened up more. Because you're ready. This is 6 years later.
Yeah.
But yeah, we just tried to draw attention back to our film.
Yeah.
And you know, it's out there, so it's not like it's not around. Anyone can still see it.
Right.
So, but yeah, that was interesting that ESPN did basically our film.
They'd like dueling Firefest docs.
Yeah. It was similar in that sense of like the Firefest doc was compromised, the one on Netflix, by the fact that Fuck Jerry made it.
Yeah.
And they were the ones behind the festival. So by that nature, it's hard to do a real documentary. Like, it looked good and like they know what they're doing, but they put the whole blame on Billy McFarlane. Whereas the Hulu one, which was not edited particularly well, and it was kind of like, it had like a million TV clips. Like, it wasn't well made, but that one was better because they're like, yeah, it was like Billy McFarlane and Fuck Jerry is like promoting this thing they know is a piece of shit. And they're still making money, you know?
Right. Yeah, that kind of pissed me off when I saw that. I was like, what the fuck, man? That's why I retweeted and everything and all that shit. I retweeted. I was a part of the fight.
The Fuck Jerry?
Of Hungary.
Yeah. I mean, look, we're two independent filmmakers who made this film. So, of course, it's disappointing to see a huge, and they have the PR in place, and they're getting like, you know, their coverage in like Rolling Stone. And it's like, yeah, man, we did this 6 years ago, you know?
Didn't the cover art look this similar too?
Well, that's the thing too. Like, the two things that were of note were funny were our film was called Hungry, and their film was called The Good, the Bad, and the Hungry, which was like, okay, you have Hungry in the title too, even though you're doing a pun.
Yeah.
And then the both posters, ours was a hot dog with yellow mustard Hungry written in like script.
Right.
And theirs was three hot dogs with yellow mustard, The Good, the Bad, the Hungry. And I was like, man, I don't know, man.
Like on some vanilla ice shit. Mine is like, doon, 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 doon.
Ours is like, doon, 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 three hot dogs. Yours is like, doon, 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 one hot dog. So, you know, there's only so much we can do.
Yeah.
And it's not like, you know, again, ESPN has a right to do it. It's they didn't want to talk to us. Shea Brothers have a right to do it.
Mm-hmm.
It just felt a little like, you know, all right. Again, I think the filmmakers are fucking hacked for doing it. I'll say that freely, but but I get why they did it.
Ah, fuck the showbiz, man.
It's hard. I mean, it's hard. You're fighting for everything.
Yeah.
You're fighting for every little crumb, and then it's like, it'd be like if in 5 years Comedy Central does, they're tasteless. They'd be like, yeah, it's the same idea. So, you know.
Dude, I had an audition for Blue Bloods. And so I go in. It's expository. It's just like, what do you call it? It's just exposition. And I'm playing a detective at a crime scene. And you tell the couple of the recurring characters, the leads, like, oh, this guy, this bandit, blah, blah, blah. And every time I read, sometimes I'll read at my manager's office. I had to get put on tape. sometimes I'll read like at my manager's office, and then there's this guy that used to be this like he's a really good actor, but he was a manager, and he managed like some of these. He used to manage Jerry Orbach, R.I.P. And so I go.
Hey, don't mention him too soon, buddy.
Sorry.
You're gonna get canceled.
Don't cancel me, guys. He should have used Venmo. I don't know. And so because one time before I had read with him, I was like, oh my God, like when you have a reader that's really good, it makes everything better. And so one time I read for him, for another show, it might have been Blue Bloods. And so I read for him, I was like, wow, that was fucking great. Maybe I got a shot at this, you know? And then come to find out, my manager's like, ah, Chris, they changed the part to a woman. So we can't. So I was like, what the fuck? A woman? And so I didn't get that part. So I go in and get put on tape, and I'm reading with this guy again. And I was like, okay, I'm going to fucking book this. I'm going to have a great read, and it's going to be awesome. So I read with him, and it was great. He turned, you know, helped turn something into, he gave me like some really good notes and all that shit, and we send the tape in. And then my manager calls me yesterday, and he's like, yeah, Chris, they wrote out that part, so nobody's going to get that part. So I think they saw, they didn't even have auditions. I sent my tape over first before the block of auditions, because I couldn't make it to the appointment to get put on tape. So my manager, you know, puts me on tape at the office, and they were like, yeah, I was like, fuck, did they see my tape and then decide to like not have that part? Yeah. They're like, fuck this. I was like, oh my God, that's so funny. And it was a great read. I had a great tape. And it's just like, well, you can't do anything about it. It's like, it's sometimes it's not about you, and you know, it's just the nature of the beast. But it's still funny. But you just keep going. You just keep going and keep fighting.
What else are we going to do, right?
Right. I was like, well, shit, you know, it's fucking Blue Bloods.
Blue Bloods, man. They loved your read, but that part no longer exists.
Well, it's funny because like I had read for something else like last week, and they gave me another part to read for like a couple days later. So the casting directors obviously like me, but it's just, they just said, oh, we don't need this part. They got rid of that part. But then I was the only person that they saw. So it's just like, fuck. And I know I'm good or whatever, but it was just like, that's pretty humbling, man. It's funny. Sometimes you got to laugh to keep from crying, I guess.
But isn't that better than someone else getting it?
Yeah, I guess so.
Because then it's not like someone that you're like, oh man, that guy, he maybe was better or whatever. It's just like, it just doesn't even exist anymore.
Yeah, it just doesn't exist.
It's out of your control.
Right.
When they change the part, it doesn't, you know, has to do with you.
Yeah, and it's almost like sometimes it's, even though it's a little hippie, it's like what's meant for you is meant for you, you know? Like it's just, it just is what it is. So I just thought I'd share that when it comes to all that showbiz shit. It's so many things are not like, are not even about you.
Yeah. I mean, most of it, I would assume, is not. I mean, there's certain people that get like zero in that are like, everything is in your control and you have to take responsibility. And it's like, yes, to an extent. But there's so many things that are just not.
Yeah.
You know, that you just have to deal with.
Right. And it's just about like the things you can't control, like, oh, trying to give a good performance or trying to like that stuff you can take care of. And you know, sometimes like even like auditions where I remember when I was in Chicago, I remember auditioning for, so Steppenwolf Theater is like one of the big theater companies.
Oh yeah,
it's like, it's the shit, right? Joan Allen, Gary Sinise, Malkovich, all these people, the list goes on and on. But the big thing was to, like, they would let you crash general auditions. Like, you could get it, like, you wait and get an appointment. And I remember one time going right after the casting director had lunch or something. And so they're kind of more relaxed. And I went in there and auditioned for her. I didn't get cast in anything, but she referred me to another director, and I auditioned for that director, and I kept I consistently worked until I left, and it was because of that casting director.
That's like, great, man. I mean, yeah. You created that opportunity.
Yeah.
It was there for you, and you took it.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was like I got work from other things. Like, you might not get work from where you think you want it, where you want to be, but you will get stuff that puts you in the position to be seen and to get work. So it's just, I don't know. It's sometimes you have to appreciate the ride. Like, you can't like look for this end point.
No, I mean, it's hard. It's too hard.
Yeah.
It's too hard to like get hung up on it. Like, we all do to other people's success and what other people has.
Yeah.
But I mean, everyone says that, like, stop worrying about what other people have. And I do think that's good, simple advice, because it's like, you drive yourself crazy, because it's not someone's success. Unless you two are going out for a part and someone's getting it, and like, then they took it, you didn't get it. But most of the time, it's like, whatever they get, there's nothing to do with whatever is going on in your life.
Yeah.
I know when I see you post finally, when you're like, guys, watch Blue Bloods tonight, I'm on it.
You'll know part of the journey. if I ever get cast, you'll be like, he fucking did it.
You did it, Blue Bloods.
And it's like two lines. Over here, sir. Here are your papers.
Tell everybody's moms.
Yeah, so it's one of those things, man. I think I've just been... I think I've been more appreciative, like, in my older age than when I was younger. I mean, I think now...
Oh, you have to. Because when you're younger, you're just like, you want everything. You don't really know how it works. So when you're older, when you get a few things, you're like, all right. I mean, you've had a few, like, that scene with Tiffany Haddish. Like, you've had a few nice things, like...
Yeah.
Through the past, like, 2 years.
Yeah, that's when it started to happen. And, like, there's other stuff coming out, and I'm happy about it. Like, I've just been more appreciative of it. And, you know, like... It's really just about the work to really show people what you're capable of. And you obviously want to make money. And sometimes when you do get that windfall, that is for those auditions you go to, and you pay $50 to park and all that shit. And it is a different, it's paying for that, you know, for those gigs you go out to. And you don't get paid, but you're just trying to get stage time, all that shit. So it comes back to you in certain ways that you don't expect. But yeah, I think I definitely think the older I've gotten, the more I appreciate more of this shit. Just like getting to do a podcast with you, doing like shows and stuff like that, where when you first start out, you just think like, oh man, I want to do that show. And you get to do shows, or people ask you to do a show, or they ask you to do a podcast. And I think it's all about being a part of a community. It sounds corny, but it's just like, I think it's true, you know.
And Blue Bloods. And getting Blue Bloods.
Booking Blue Bloods. Yeah.
Yeah.
Try to get those residuals when they do the network shit. Get on these network shows so they can you get residuals and all that shit, man. But I guess I want to shift gears, man. I want to talk about Midsommar and The Farewell, since we both saw it, because you're the unofficial co-host of Indie Movie Corner. And we're just bringing it to the regular feed. But I want you to tell me, like, what have you liked this year? Like, what have you seen that has like knocked your socks off? We're at the midpoint of the year.
Usually I see way more stuff, but because of the because like you said in the beginning, I got a dog. It's just like I haven't gone as much, but I've still seen a few things. The two that you just mentioned are probably the best two that I've seen. I don't think anything's even on that level. I enjoyed Toy Story 4. I thought that was nice. I don't think it was a huge point in making it, besides it's just like these characters are fun. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of the same thing. And I thought Booksmart was fun.
I enjoyed that too.
Did you know Olivia Wilde directed it? Did you know that?
Did I know a woman?
Have they told you enough that she...
of course I know that a white starlet had made...
Like that. Every movie I see now before it, they're like, Olivia Wilde, director of Booksmart, and she's like doing like the fucking the red, like the Coke commercials, like queuing it up, like which drives me nuts. That these little like, it's like these 20-year-old kids to get these like $60,000 cameras to shoot like a minute movie in the concession stand.
Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Those are like those Regal cinemas.
It's Regal. It's Regal. They're like, hi, I'm Olivia Wilde, and I'm the director of Booksmart, and here's two kids from whatever film school, they did a film, and then they're like, yeah, well, it's about life and you know, like kind of what you want to be versus what you're supposed to be, and then it's like a minute video of like a kid buying a Coke. Like, you want to go to the movies, and it's like shot with like a $60,000 camera. It's so funny. It drives me nuts. So like, I guess you got to start somewhere, but it's always like, why do these kids have this?
Oh my God. Yeah, I always wondered about those. Like, yeah, they're in the library. Hey, you want to go to the movies?
Yeah, you want to go to the movies? It's like, yeah, all right, yeah, let's go. And then it's
that is the shit, though. You think about that in college where you're like, oh, let's go fucking, you know, like, that is fun. It is. There is some heart and nostalgia to that, but that shit that you just said was fucking hilarious.
We can't get rid of the movies for that. It's a social thing. Like, that's why I don't think it'll ever go, no matter how popular on demand or Netflix or whatever. Like, I still think the movies have an element that you can't get at home.
I love it,
getting
man.
Out, doing something. It's the best.
Dude, I got to tell you, I went to one of these before my that casino gig. I went to the iPick in Dobbs Ferry in Westchester, and it's fucking amazing. I went to see Crawl, which
it's fun, right?
It's so much fun. Did you see it?
I didn't see it. It looks fun.
It's one of those movies where like if you don't see it within the first 2 weeks, you're probably gonna miss that shit. And if you end up seeing it on video or on streaming or something, you'll enjoy it. But that fucking thing was a thrill ride. So iPick is expensive as fuck. Even if I had a girlfriend, I don't know that I would take her there. I don't know, man.
Much more?
Shit. Okay, the ticket cost $25.
Okay.
Ticket was $25. I bought some sliders, like three little sliders. That was $17.
Yeah, that's how they get you.
I've got some French fries. I knew I was going to lose money on this, but I was like, fuck it. I'm going to do it.
Money on it like it's an investment.
Yeah. I knew I was going to spend some money. Like, I knew it wasn't going to be cheap, but I said, you know what? I never go. I'm in the AMC premiere. I'm just going to see how the other people live. Let's see how the wealthy people of Westchester live. I just want to experience that for one afternoon. I was the only person in the theater. The seats, like, you get these pods.
You were the only person in the theater?
I was only, it was like 5 o'clock. I was the only person there on a, that's 5 great. O'clock on that's a Wednesday. Best. Yeah, it's the shit. And I had a nice young teenage kid working. So I had to tip him well. So I ended up paying like $50 for the whole event for just me. Because the fries were $12. The sliders were $17. And then
this
could
be the new podcast.
Yeah, and then I got
you complain about prices of the theater, not even about the movie. You talk about, you're like, hey, tonight, this reminds me of something my dad did once. He saw this movie, The Constant Gardener.
Yes.
Do you remember that movie?
Good movie.
And I go, oh, what'd you think of it? And he goes, oh, it was cold. So I thought he meant the movie was like cold. It didn't really have heart. And then I found out like a week or two later, he was just like, the theater, no, it was cold. The theater was too cold.
Nothing about Rachel Weisz's Oscar winning performance.
We love Rachel Weisz. So I was like, this could be the new podcast where you go, you're like, yeah, we saw Crawl. I think the burgers were overpriced, fries, too much money, and I wouldn't go there again. Thank you.
You know what, though? That shit is luxurious, dude. It's impressive. I was like, God, that. And the movie, I enjoyed the movie. I knew that girl was gonna be good because she was in that show, Skins. The
British one. The
British joint, and she is Cara Scodelario. And she's married to the dude that played Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
I remember that.
Ben Walker. He used to have a show at Joe's Pub.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. So I knew that she was going to be good. She was going to be compelling. And then Barry Pepper's playing her dad. So he's good in a lot of shit, too. Like, he's good in everything, too. And then there's fucking alligators. I was like, I was the only person at the, I was like, oh, shit. Fuck. Oh, God. You know, like, just like, I was on the edge of my seat. It's a fun movie.
Yeah. But it seems more fun than some of the other movies I've seen recently that were, like, supposed to be fun that mm-hmm. kind of weren't, like The Shallows or whatever.
The Shallows was all right.
That's fine.
Yeah.
That's fine. Or the, what was the Mandy Moore one? The
47 deep, meters down?
47 meters deep or whatever. That movie kind of just sucked.
They're making a part two.
Of course they are. Why not? Do the remake.
Shout out to Byron Allen.
Did he make that movie?
Yeah. Yeah, he's like behind
Byron Allen, the setup guy?
The owner of the Weather Channel. The
Byron Allen's the setup guy.
He's like, the setup
Chris,
guy,
man,
too?
I heard you audition for Blue Bloods.
And yeah,
then
man.
You have to do your bit about Blue Bloods.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah. And I'd run into the bit. Yeah, dude. Like, he's a part of the distributor or film company.
I don't think he's a director. He's a producer.
No. He's a producer, yeah.
Okay, yeah. That guy's like loaded.
He's very loaded.
He's got his hands in so many things. You can't hate on that guy.
No, not at all.
I thought the show was like, it's just very formulaic. Like, yeah. So Chris, man, you got a joke about Walk to Remember. And you're like, yeah. So I saw Walk to Remember. It was you can't hate on a guy that's like that successful, that's got his hands in a million different things.
Yeah. Yeah, so I enjoyed that, but like I think, you know, it is a luxurious experience. Like that it's you definitely and even like going into like an AMC which is you're paying like $22-23 and you can see three movies a week. You can't fucking beat that. You can't.
I haven't joined.
Well, you live in Queens, so you can't really.
Yeah, there's a Regal close to me.
Yeah, all the
I don't
comics
know if they have any sort of deal.
All the comics that I know, like New York comics that live in Astoria, it's not good for you unless you're in the city every day, and then you get off work or something, and then you decide to go to Lincoln Square or any of the AMCs in the city, but.
Yeah, if you want to see the stuff that is only playing, it starts like The Farewell plays at the Angelica and AMC.
Right.
But that theater, the AMC the 13 in Lincoln Square, it's not like a nice theater.
No, it's not
like
at all.
It's an old, like the seats are small. Like it's not a nice theater, but they have this stuff before the rest of the city has it.
Right. Before.
You know that.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Like that's, I mean, I made the best out of me being in the city. When you're a commuter, when you drive into the fucking city, and I had an audition, and then I went to see The Farewell, and then I went down to the Stand to check out the new, you know, the new club and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I was like, okay, I'll go see The Farewell. It's too early to go to the Stand, so I'll just go see this movie and that I really want to see. Because if not, it would have been open. It's in Westchester now. It's at the Jacob Burns now. But like, I was so excited to see it. I was like, fuck it, I'm not gonna wait. And then Friday I had to go into the city. So, you know, it's just about time. Because I did go into when I saw Midsommar. I saw that at the Alamo Draft House in Yonkers, and now they have like a monthly program.
Draft House is great.
Yeah.
I like that the best. I like that more than the other one. The other one that's like the Draft House in Brooklyn.
Nighthawk?
Nighthawk's really good though too. And Nighthawk plays kind of more like offbeat stuff, and they'll kind of do like theme stuff. So it's really cool too.
It's about the same. One's a little Nighthawk is the aesthetic of the Nighthawk is a little swankier.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember it being. Don't they have two spaces now?
I mean, why not? Remake? They remade it?
There's one on Metropolitan Ave, and then I think they took over. There's one supposed to be in Prospect Park. I'm just looking it up now. Nighthawk has. What are they playing? See, so they've got Midsommar, Wild Rose. The Last Black Man in San Francisco. I think that's my favorite movie of the year.
I need to say, you really liked it, right?
Yeah, I liked it because it was, I think it's a great film, but it also has some of the pretentiousness that I like, that I either like or don't mind, you know, that some people will try to like shit on and say that they're better than, but like I was like, oh, I get what you're doing. You're trying. I get that flair that you're throwing across, but then it also has like a heart to it that was really, it's kind of surprising. Kind of had like this sweetness that Be Kind, Rewind had.
Both have Danny Glover.
Danny Glover's in it. Yeah, yeah. So and it looked great. So like I would say to me, the best that I've seen as far as like, if you know, you and I can talk about this shit without it being like, what about Endgame? You know what I'm saying? But you know what I mean? Like, and
what about it?
And I saw that shit twice. I like that movie.
Why, you saw it twice?
Yeah, because I thought I was going to talk to a nerd about it on the podcast to make sure that I was up on par. But I don't think anybody really gave a shit. I don't think anybody really cared that much.
Endgame. Yeah. Avengers.
Yeah. I thought they stuck the landing, you know. But anyway, you're not into those. But
no, I didn't see it. I haven't seen any Avengers. I never see superhero movies. Very rarely do I ever see any. Like, I saw Dark Knight and, you know, Batman from when we were kids. I've never seen a Spider-Man movie. I've never seen an Avengers. It just doesn't do anything for me. I don't care. I just don't care. It's like the same thing every time. It's just, I don't give a shit. I remember I started watching Jessica Jones. I saw like a few episodes and I was just like, man, this show would be so much better if she didn't have superpowers. If this was just about like this cool, like dark, like brooding, like woman, like who solves crimes. And then I just can't get into the superpower stuff.
So you didn't even get to see the episode I was on?
Were you on Jessica Jones?
Yeah.
No, you should have told me. I would have kept watching for that.
I forget what episode. I think it's season two. I don't remember.
Yeah. And it shows fine. Like, it's just, yeah, it was fine. To do with it. Obviously, these movies are like, well made. They know what they're doing. It's just like, it's just not for me. And that's fine. I don't go and cry about it online and go, cancel Avengers. I don't care. Yeah. It's not for me. That's a thing where it's like, if it's not for you, it's fine. You don't have to, you know, it's like, not everything's for you.
That's true.
You know, it's weird that people get upset about a movie too. They like don't like the ending, and it's like, okay, fine. You didn't like it.
Yeah,
that's like nerd shit. Nerds get insane about that. Obsessive fans.
Yeah, it's one of those things, dude. Like, you got to go with what you like, and when you're almost 40, you kind of just that's not my thing.
Speak for yourself. I'm almost 30.
Okay. All right. Even though we graduated the same year.
Did we graduate the same year?
High school. I think we're the same age. Probably. Graduated in 98, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Long time ago.
Yeah. So, you know, like, I would say, like, that movie has everything that a fan like me would like. It's from A24. All those other things that I mentioned. It just hit on all cylinders for me. I thought like, and it's, you know, it's black people in it. I had the side eye was that a white guy directed it, which I thought was like a black story. And I was like, oh shit, what is this going to be? And then come to find out that him and the writer, the writer star, Jimmy Fails, they're both like, they're close friends. So I was like, okay, I get it. Mm-hmm. Kind of like, it's what, you know what it is? It's what everybody said that, I'm not going to do that.
What? Blindspotting?
Yeah. It's kind of like, it delivered more than what everybody said Blindspotting would do. Even though I liked Blindspotting. I thought it was
I like Blindspotting too.
I thought it was good. But I just thought like everybody's, oh my God. You know, everybody.
Well, you want to, the way you're talking about, the way people talked about The Witch is the way I felt about Midsommar. Because everyone talked about The Witch as like this, like really kind of like slow burn. It's shot well, blah, blah, blah. Got to see it. And I didn't like it at all.
Or as our buddy J.O. Covan calls it, The Vivitch.
I saw Midsommar, and I was like, this is kind of like the way people spoke at The Witch. Like, I thought Midsommar was shot so well.
Yeah.
And it was slow when you kind of go on this journey. It is slow, but you're like stuck on this place with them. And it's kind of funny. Not even kind of, it is funny. And all the things people thought about The Witch, like, I think this guy, and I loved Hereditary, so this guy is 2 for 2. I don't know if he's done anything before that, probably some shorts or whatever.
Yeah.
I think I can't wait to see what this guy does next. I think he's so talented.
Well, let's talk about it. Let's just get into Midsommar. I'll read the blurb as I always do. Midsommar, written and directed by Ari Aster.
Ari Aster.
Yeah, with their relationship in trouble, a young American couple travel to a fabled Swedish midsummer festival where a seemingly pastoral paradise transforms into a sinister, dread-soaked nightmare as the locals reveal their terrifying agenda. Your overall thoughts on Midsommar, and we'll break it down from there.
That's fantastic. I was so in. Like, sometimes, like, movies kind of just come down to, like, are you in or you out, you mm-hmm. know? And sometimes maybe you don't like the ending, and then you're like, ah. But I just, like, I'm, like, midway through it, and I'm like, man, I really love this. I just, like, the opening was amazing. Like, the way the character dynamic between the guy and the girlfriend, like, I love that scene where he's, like, yeah, I invited my girlfriend. I mean, she's not going to come, but, like, I invited her, and you guys want her to go. Like, it was so good. It was so good that it was, like, you just know this kind of relationship where it's, like, he knows he needs to break up, but he's, like, he can't. And, you kind of saw what was happening. You saw that the friend was luring them. And, like, you could tell, you knew it's one of those, like, trips from hell.
Yeah.
But it's just, like, it was just done so well with the shots and the pacing and even the trips. Like, movies, like, I did a really specific joke. Like, Gaspar Noé, who's, like, this really over-the-top. I don't know if you saw Climax. Did you see Climax?
No, I have not.
Did you ever see anything by Gaspar Noé? He did, like, Irreversible and Enter the Void, and he does these, like, really trippy films.
I don't think I've heard of Enter the Void. I think I've seen
it. Enter the Void was interesting. Like, I always watch his films because they're interesting, but I don't necessarily think overall they're, like, amazing. He did this movie that called Love that was on Netflix, and at one point there's a 3D cum shot. Like, it's crazy. It's crazy. Like, cum is shooting out at you. He's crazy. But he does this thing where he'll, like, put the camera upside down. And, like, Climax, I didn't particularly enjoy. Now, someone could say all the things I'm saying about Midsommar and apply that to Climax and be like, oh, I liked it, you know, for the shots and this and the grittiness of it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like he'll take the camera and it's, like, upside down for, like, 10 minutes. And it's nauseating and it's fucking annoying. Whereas, like, Midsommar, like, the camera goes upside down for, like, a minute. So I'm like, I pictured Gaspar Noé watching that and be like, why is the camera only upside down for a minute? It should have been the whole second half. Like, it's just like, it's like a more controlled, like, I think he has such an aesthetic and such a control of it. It's like organized chaos. Like, that was chaos, that the farm or wherever they're on, but it was organized. Like, the way the information was given out and, like, the way the weirdness kind of happened little by little of the people falling off, but you could explain it because they die at 72.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it just keeps getting weirder and weirder. And it was just so well done, I thought, to the conclusion, which I thought was satisfying. That's my Midsommar rant.
Okay. I thought that first 10 minutes, the first, I guess maybe the first, along with the first act, like, the moments where you find, I don't know that we want to spoil it yet, but the moments that you find that what the reason for her deep pain is incredible. I thought that the first maybe what 15 like 10 minutes
like 10
of
minutes,
it.
10 minutes, yeah.
The first 10 minutes was fucking incredible. I enjoyed the part where it was kind of like, this is a horror movie, but there's like this, like, this, like, lightness to it with the comedy, like with my fucking girlfriend, Jesus Christ, she's gonna come, you know, exactly what you said.
It was such a good scene. Yeah, he comes in, he's like, she's gonna come. And they're like, what? And they're like, well, she's not gonna actually go, but she's coming, and you guys want, it's like, yeah, she's coming. We know what you did. It's like your friend who, like, brings his girlfriend, like, nobody likes, and it's like, oh, yeah. I invited her. She's not gonna come though, and of course she's coming.
Yeah, and I just thought, like, it. So it was 2.5 hours long, I felt it. Some movies you don't feel it that much, but like I felt like it was a simmer to a boil. It's not a, I didn't not like it, but I just thought like, I thought that some air could have been taken out of it.
Sure. I mean, any 2.5 hour movie, I mean, a movie that I brought up that's similar is Burning.
Yeah.
Is 2.5 hours. I loved Burning, but I felt like Burning was too long. So I'm fine with you saying that, where it's like, yeah, man, this film could have been 2 hours. Like, but I think the pacing worked more here than Burning, where I thought if Burning was 2 hours, I would have put that like maybe number one on my list. Like, I loved it so much. It's just like, yeah, man, it's a little long though. So this is kind of a similar idea. Like, it's just like, yeah, I didn't feel it as much. I thought like you're stuck there. You're
stuck.
You're stuck in this hell that you know you should leave, but they cut it.
And then,
So I thought it was a little more excusable there, but I get what you're saying.
And I felt like, you know, like you go on YouTube and you have like these nerds breaking down. I'm a nerd too, so I'll just, you know, say that. But you have these nerds breaking down like all this stuff. And I get that. That stuff is cool and interesting. But this film is really one of the most straightforward films that I've seen in a while. Like when it comes to, you know, people trying to break stuff down. Like, you know, when they see that bear in the cage, like, why is that bear? What's that? Like, that's a bear.
Did people break down? Like, I didn't watch anything on it, but I'd imagine it's just like, oh, if you look at the painting, the drawings. Yeah, but that's just like, yeah, it's still a straightforward story. It's a vacation from hell.
Right.
Like, it's a trip from hell.
And it's a breakup. So, it's a breakup movie and all this and that. But I just...
Yeah, I mean, I think he took mythology. I think
He definitely did.
Yeah, which is cool. I don't think, like, Hereditary, he made up all the, like, backstory. I liked Hereditary more, for the record. He made up the backstory of this cult and stuff. But I think this is all based on, like, Swedish or Norwegian, like, folklore, right? Am I correct in saying
something
that?
Something like that. What do they call it? It's a genre. Like, I didn't know that going in. Like, what's, like the Wicker Man and all that stuff?
Oh,
like
Wicker Man's another example of that's kind of like this.
Like a pastoral horror type thing?
I don't know if I don't know the term, but folk horror? Movies like that.
Yeah.
It's like you have a folklore. I mean, even like Blair Witch in a way is like this. Although Blair Witch is like found footage, but it's similar of like you have this mythology that like, yeah, I like that he didn't make it up, that if he did, he went with like things that exist, like, and he kind of brought them to life of these like Nordic kind of like horrors. I thought that was that was interesting to do that. And you know what's going to happen here. You know it's going to end poorly.
Yeah.
But the character, the dynamic between the boyfriend, the girlfriend, and the friends was excellent.
Yeah.
They were all very good.
I thought, like, I think what's helped him in these first two films is the fact that he has, like, both films are anchored by these terrific performances from female leads. Like, you have Toni Collette, who...
So good.
At the time that I saw that movie, I'm like, who's beating her? You know?
And then everyone beat her.
And everybody.
She wasn't even nominated.
Yeah, she wasn't even nominated. That's because we don't respect horror films.
You know, the Oscars, it's like they get it wrong a lot with that.
Yeah.
It's like, why wasn't Toni Collette nominated? Like, I don't know. I'm going to look at the list. Like, yeah, it's like five people were better than her. She was so good. She carried the movie. Did you like Hereditary more than this?
I got to see that one again. That movie, like, it was just another, like, I was talking to a buddy about it. And it was just like, it's interesting. I just don't know that I can. Like, I walked out of that movie, like, just...
Okay, can I just say, actress in the leading role? It was 2018,
Olivia
right?
Coleman. Olivia Coleman won...
Wait, oh, I gotta look at 2019.
Best Supporting.
Olivia Coleman won. You're right, for The Favorite.
She won Best Actress, right?
Yeah, she won for The Favorite. No, she won.
She did. She did. She won. She played Queen Anne.
So you're looking at, Olivia
she beat
Coleman
Melissa McCarthy. Like, I'm biased because I was in that.
Melissa McCarthy was excellent.
She was great.
Melissa McCarthy was really good. And when I saw that, I was like, oh, she's probably going to win.
Yeah.
Lady Gaga stars more in, like, whatever. Good.
Yeah.
Glenn Close, the wife. Nobody saw that.
I saw. She was good in it, but it was just like.
Okay, one person saw it.
Her daughter was like in it more than she was. Her daughter was playing the younger version of her, and it was like she was in it more. Like all the shit was happening to her daughter. Like the acting was happening. you know, the reaction shit, and then like she's like the end of what her daughter was, you know, in the film.
You know? Yeah, it's not a prestigious enough movie, the Hereditary, because it's seen as like horror and it's like frivolous, but it was done so well,
right,
that it should have got she should at least got a nomination, because she's dealing with, why is it any different? She's dealing with death and she's dealing with hardship.
Right.
And she's showing a superb range in this role that it's like, how's it any different than like whatever Glenn Close did in this movie that you're the only person that saw it? how's it any different? And then the girl from Roma got nominated. Look, it's tight. It's five women. It's tight. These awards are tight. But
those races are all in the female category. It's always like, always get these great performances, so it's hard to narrow it down to five. But like, and then you get to Midsommar, and it's anchored by Frances Pugh, who I'd never heard of before this, and she was incredible.
She's great.
So when you see that, it's like that helps. Like you got an all-star, you know, MVP candidate.
She's like James Harden. She's carrying you. She's taking all the shots. And then the other guys just got to, like, you're going to be open. You just got to hit the three.
Yeah.
You know, that's it.
Right. This guy gets the rebound. This guy gets, you know, block shots. This guy's going to hit.
The guys were fine.
Yeah.
The guy from Where the Millers, that kid, he was funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was good. I mean, again, it's like he's like the comic relief. Like, mm-hmm. I agree with you. There's nothing like that. Like, the uniqueness is the shots and the pacing, right, and like his aesthetic and what he does. But the story is like, and I guess the folklore, that's the unique too, is incorporating all that. So it does have a lot of unique elements, but you know what's going to happen.
And what's interesting that all this shit is happening in the daytime.
Oh God. Yeah. And like I said before, the drug scene was done really well.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't over the top. It wasn't like a Gaspar Noé. It was like things like maybe just the flower in her head, what do you call that? Like the headdress? What do you call that? Like the flower thing, it's flickering. And like, it was just done really well. Everything.
Yeah. I think maybe, I don't know. Cause it's just that Toni Collette performance was so good. And when I walked out of this movie, I was behind this. I was in Connecticut, like in the middle of nowhere, Connecticut, like doing a show. And it was just like this boyfriend and girlfriend. He turns to his girlfriend. He's like, "You're never picking the movies again."
Oh, yeah. Nikki said that to me. Nikki said the same thing to me, which is so funny that, like, sometimes I like that we don't always agree. Sometimes we're on the same page, and sometimes she just felt like she hated Good Time. And like, I saw it with her and my buddy, from high school. Like, we were going to the movies, and I was hanging out with him in a day, and I convinced him to stick around, so we all went. And then after we're working out, we're like, "Oh my God, that was amazing!" And she was like, "That was fucking terrible." Like, it just didn't hit for her. She just was annoyed the whole time.
Yeah.
So for this, she ultimately like kind of liked it. She didn't like the gore. She thought the gore was excessive. Like some of the stuff they've shown over and over again, which I like, but that was her reaction. She's like, "Oh, you can't pick movie," but it's like, get out of here.
She dies at the end, right? Toni Collette.
Yeah, they all do.
Yeah, everybody's dead.
Yeah. I mean, the thing about Hereditary was a trick. Hereditary was a trick movie where they like set up that girl that she's so important.
Yeah,
and then she's the killer, which was awesome though. Which was like so kind of reset the movie. That scene was really good. I've heard some people critique it that, like, why did it have to be in like a host, like would it have to be ultimately in a male host body? Then why was it going to go in her? I've heard people critique some of like the mythology and stuff, and that's fine. But I thought it all worked really well in that, and I thought that the cult thing gave it kind of an interesting element over just like, ooh, this is like a haunted house movie, where I don't think those movies are very deep, and I don't think it's just like, I don't think they go very far. And I thought Hereditary had like extra layers to it.
Yeah. Another one of my buddies, shout out to my man, Maranzio Vance, but he was saying like, he did not care for it. Like, I was trying to figure out like
Hereditary, Midsommar.
I guess both of them, but he was saying that like Ari Aster, I'd have to have him on. I can't hate mentioning people that can't defend themselves, but like on the podcast, but he brought it. A lot of people said that Us was like they didn't. A lot of people didn't like it. That's kind of a polarizing movie.
Didn't like Us?
Yeah. And they were saying,
I thought it was okay.
I thought it was fine. Like, I got it on Steelbook Blu-ray. I like that Lupita Nyong'o performance.
What's Steelbook? What does that even
it's
mean?
It's a Best Buy exclusive. It just comes in a hard case.
Okay. I'm still. So it comes in a Steelbook?
Yeah, I'm a collector. But
I think we'll keep going.
Well, it's just because Get Out was a hit. And then the next thing the guy does, like they're really trying to think. They think it's going to be like the thing he did before, and people are looking for like all this depth into the movie where it was to a certain degree it was straightforward, but you don't look into it like if it's a horror movie, is there going to be that much depth, or are they going to treat it the same way as they would treat The Hills Have Eyes or?
Yeah, I know that's kind of my point of what I was saying about like before. I think it was good, and I thought it was creative, and I love the incorporating the Hands Across America thing,
right?
The world or whatever.
Yeah,
that's what she saw. That was like the last thing, so that was like her thing.
Yeah,
that she like took with her. That's gonna like show up. But I didn't get how like so they switched. If she's the regular person. And she switches like her clone. I don't know what you want to call it. Clone, is that fair, right?
Her tether or whatever.
Yeah, I'm gonna just say clone. She switches her clone, and now she's in that world. How come she couldn't just get out? How come she couldn't just go back to the surface? She has the knowledge that she was like a normal person.
Oh, I don't fucking know. I don't know.
Yeah, that was the only thing where I'm watching. I'm like, well, why couldn't she just? She couldn't just go up.
I liked these three movies, Hereditary, Us, and Midsommar. Like, there's stuff, like, I just don't want to totally dismiss it, you know, any of them.
I liked Us. Dude, I liked it. I thought it was fun.
Yeah, I just liked the, like, I just think what we're seeing is, like, you're not aware of it because you don't watch these superhero movies, but the stakes get raised when you have quality actors in these roles. So the material, whether you think it's good or not, something is getting elevated when you have a very good actor in a role. Like the stakes get higher. I remember watching like Doctor Strange, and it was two characters it was Chiwetel Ejiofor and the guy that played, oh fuck, now I'm doing it. The guy that everybody makes fun of for I think the character's name is Wang. The Asian guy that like every time they're about to fight, he goes away. Like he doesn't really, okay. he doesn't really fight. I'm going to find this shit. Cause I know people, the nerds are going to yell at me. They're yelling at me right now. Cause I can't think about it off the dome. Benedict Wong.
Okay.
And Wong is the character that's like, he's like Doctor Strange's assistant or right-hand man or whatever. But he's having this scene with Chiwetel. I was like, these guys are fucking good actors. You know, like these are great performances and they're elevating the text. And so like when you have a Toni Collette, you have Frances Pugh, you have Lupita in these films that are solid, that shit is gonna, and you know you got Gabriel Byrne, but you know they're not the leads, but you have these people in these lead roles, it's gonna be good, it's gonna be better, and because those performances are good, you're gonna have to have that, they deserve that awards attention. Am I wrong? Mm-hmm. Am I wrong? No. Here Jeff,
I'm with you.
You know, I just came up with that, dude.
You're talking about the Steelbook performances.
Yes. That make a nerd like me pay $32 for a fucking Blu-ray. You know, when you could get it for cheaper for streaming. You know, I don't know. Like, but you know, I think my buddy Maranzio, like anytime he'll always find the something to cut down. And
well, what does he like?
Love hearing him talk about it.
You're assuming to say it's a little, people are being a little too critical.
Sometimes. And a lot of people did not like us that much.
I thought people loved it. I'm sorry. I didn't know. I thought people were like...
A lot of my buddies. I had a conversation with one of my buddies. They're just like, I didn't get it, man. I just, you know... They didn't like it as much as Get Out. And sometimes that's...
Not everything has to be the best. Like, yeah. It doesn't have to be better than Get Out. You can make a movie and you like it or you don't like it.
Yeah.
Like, Hereditary, I like Hereditary more than Midsommar. Other people might disagree. It doesn't mean that, like, it doesn't take anything away from Midsommar. It's it doesn't have to be better. It's like, you know, he may never top Hereditary in my eyes, but he's still going to do cool shit. And it's like, you know, I mean, either way, Jordan Peele's fine.
Yeah.
Whether people like it or not, he's going to get to do what he wants. He's got creative freedom. Like, he's in such a good position to just, like, do so. It's interesting.
Same
now.
For Ari Aster, too. Like, you think that if they offered me something, I'd have to audition. But you know what I mean? If they offered me something, I'd fucking do it.
Yeah. Did I read it correctly? Chris Rock is writing the new Saw movie?
I don't know. I know he's. I think so. I've heard stuff about that he's either going to be in it or he's got something.
No, I think he's writing it.
Okay.
Because you're looking at, like, Danny McBride did the new Halloween, Jordan Peele, you know, us and Get Out, and then Chris Rock doing Saw. It's an interesting crossover of, like, people with, like, comedic backgrounds doing movies.
I wouldn't be mad. I still need to see that Halloween. I haven't seen that yet.
It's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine. I mean, I saw it because I loved those movies as a kid, and, you know, I went to go see it. It was fine. I was fine with it.
I think
it's literally nothing you have to see.
Yeah, I'll eventually get to it. I mean, I had this on my DVR. What is it? The Possession of Hannah Grace.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know that one of my Pretty Little Liars.
Which one?
Girls was in it. Shay Mitchell.
Oh, yeah, very pretty. You're a big Shane Mitchell guy.
Yeah, I like her. Glad she's going to have a kid soon, because I know she's...
Did you see the Perfection on Netflix?
Yes, of course I saw it.
What did you think of that?
Fucking weird and crazy.
Yeah, I didn't think it was good.
Great lesbian scenes.
I mean, I thought it started out really cool, and it had, like, a great premise.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's just like, the idea, it was so crazy, the idea that she would have to, like, cut off her hand to get her away from this guy. Like, about PowerPoint? How about just send her? It was so bizarre, and, like, it kind of, like, it serves its purpose. It's trying to be, like, this weird horror movie, but I just didn't go with it. I was, like, it started out, I thought, really, like, well with the two of them. Then I was, like, oh, this is interesting. And then where it went, I was, like... Yeah, what's the fucking point of it? What is this? What are we doing? And then that final shot, it was like, that was kind of funny.
Yeah, it was more than what I thought it was going to be. I thought it was just going to be like a rivalry, but it was way more than that. It was fine. You know, it was entertaining. I think we're good with Midsommar. I mean, would you recommend people see this in the theater?
Yeah, it's a good experience. It's great.
Yeah, just don't drink a lot of water, you know.
I mean, you can get up. It's 2.5 hours. You can get up and come right back.
It was crazy because when I was talking about this a couple weeks ago on the podcast, you know, you can drink at the draft house, at the Alamo draft house. There was this woman, she was just really freaking out at these climactic moments towards the end. She was crying, like this middle-aged woman.
She's crying?
Yeah, she was like, like she stood up and she was like freaking out. I think she was drunk. I don't know.
She might have been drunk or, like, I don't know. Maybe that happened to her and all her friends and she got out. So it was like flashbacks. Who knows? But that's so strange. That's such a reaction like that.
Yeah, it was fucking weird. I was like, oh my God.
Maybe she's the Florence Pugh of her group.
I guess so. There was this woman that was sitting next to me that was kind of neurotic and interesting, and I was sitting next to her and I wanted to know what she thought of the movie, but she just left so quickly. But she's kind of like my date, but you know,
I had a fun experience at the end of Us. Like, it wasn't that crowded, the theater, when we saw it, and there was a guy that was in back of us that, like, talked, he was like talking the whole movie. I think it was like some like older Italian guy. He was like talking the whole fucking movie. It was very annoying.
I hate that shit.
And like I sometimes say something, sometimes I don't. One time I yelled at kids to shut the fuck up, and then it was like kind of awkward, and I was just like, all right, I'm not going to say anything now, because just basically because of that, because like these kids kept talking, and I was like, shut the fuck up.
What did they say after you said that?
They stopped. They didn't do anything. And it was like, but it was like the very end of the movie. But like, just kind of talking the whole movie, and then as soon as it's over, these two, probably like young 20s, these kids are like, motherfucker, you were talking the whole movie. And they're like getting in his face.
Yeah.
And then I was kind of like, they were like too aggressive because the movie's done at this point.
It's yeah.
Like, what are you mad? The movie's done. And then it's also like, I was like, but at the same time, like, yeah, they're right. Like, you were so annoying. And the guy, I think it's like an old Italian guy, because he's like, what? This is no way to talk to me. Hey. And it was like, and then I kind of was like almost going to get involved and be like, yeah, you guys are both wrong here. And then Nikki was like, dude, just let's go. Don't say
I wouldn't say shit, dude. I have a bit about that I'm working
on. Let's go. I was like, you're both wrong. You talk the whole fucking time. You're very annoying. And you guys, why are you going so crazy now? It's done.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why I like going to early shows and you don't get that much.
Avoid the riffraff?
To avoid that shit, man. I hate that shit, dude.
Yeah.
Like, and that's why sometimes I don't like these luxury theaters. Like, thank God for this AMC dine-in theater that they open in Hackensack. That's like, it's amazing. It's like, you kind of get college kids every now and then, but for the most part, people are there to have a good time. They're paying good money for these tickets and they're buying food and stuff. They want to have a good time. They don't want people to be talking. Like, we're trying to be entertained by the screen, not by you fucking talking through the movie. And I like how they shut that shit down at Alamo. Like, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, you got it. Nighthawk is good about that too.
Yeah, man. So yeah, I would say if you're a fan of horror movies, if you're a fan of just seeing a really great performance from a lead actress who's gonna work for the rest of her life, and Frances Pugh, like, fucking, you know, it's worth it. It's definitely something to see. It is fucking weird.
100%. It's also funny too.
Yeah,
it's funny.
Yeah. So, I recommend that. Let's talk about The Farewell, man. Let's get into that a little bit, man. I thought I had the blurb pulled up. I got it now. Okay. All right. The Farewell, written and directed by Lulu Wang. Billy's family returns to China under the guise of a fake wedding to stealthily say goodbye to their beloved matriarch, the only person that doesn't know she has only a few weeks to live. Jeff, what are your thoughts on this film?
The movie was great. It's a really touching movie. It's done really well. And it was just nice. It was like, it kind of like, it makes you like want to go hang out with your family, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it has this really like warm kind of like aura to it. And the performances are really good. Awkwafina is really good. I think you know her, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and she was good.
She's a friend of the podcast.
I mean, she's going to be... You want to talk about Florence Pugh working. Like, Awkwafina's probably going to always have stuff now, right?
Yeah, she is.
After that.
Yeah.
Because that's like a really critically respected movie. And she was the main... Like, she's not going to be nominated, though, right?
Right now...
Okay?
See, look, dude, right now, like I said, I haven't seen... So this is July... July is almost over.
I don't think Florence Pugh will be nominated.
You think she
will? I think same thing as Toni Collette. Nope, I don't think she will. I think it's the same thing. It won't be respected.
Well, I think you're right. But I think with this...
I can see Awkwafina over her.
I can see her getting nominated.
Isn't that crazy?
That's
Awkwafina.
That's crazy. I was watching Pretty Little Liars at your ex's house. And
that's right.
And
right?
She came a couple times and she did the podcast and went to her apartment.
Yeah, I remember Chelsea being like, hey, do you know this like rapper Awkwafina? And I'm like, no. And then now she's in like everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
But she was great in it. I mean, you got like, she was so good, and the movie's just so warm, and it's just really well done. And it's, you know, it has its moments, and it's like, it's shot pretty well too. Like some of the shots, I do like the kind of like those like kind of slow motion, like kind of walking shots. Mm-hmm. And, you know, going back, they go back to China, and like, it's kind of like simple, like there, she's in New York and then she goes to China. It's a simple story, goes to China. And then it's like, it brings up like the ethical kind of question, is it right what they're doing? And
right.
To me, I think it's like not my place to say if that's the way that society handles death. Like mm-hmm. death is so tricky. Like there's no right or wrong way to handle death. It's
yeah.
so hard. So if this is the way they handle it, like, okay, you know, that's fine. But yeah, I was on board the whole time. I thought it was really just like a really good movie.
Yeah, dude. I think this is one of the best films of the year. It's very,
yeah.
I like the fact that, I don't know if you can call the fact that it's, I guess it's a foreign film to a certain degree. I mean, the director,
yeah, most of it's subtitled.
Yeah. The director is American. I want to say she is. I'm sounding like a fucking ICE agent, but I'm just saying, but I'm
we
just saying,
find out.
I like the fact that there were subtitles, and I, you know, I saw this in Lincoln Square at the AMC packed with Asians. And it was really a really neat. That was added another layer to the experience that I appreciated. And then when you see something that's so culturally specific, there's I was like, oh, that's just like my family. That's just like, you know, we do that shit. You know, like you see the similarities when in the specificity of something that's different from you, you know, on the surface, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I like the fact that there were subtitles. I really appreciated that you had to be immersed in that culture. I like the fact that Billy Awkwafina's character was Chinese. Like, she's American. She's definitely American, but she seemed to operate in China relatively. She didn't have a problem. You know, it wasn't like a total fish out of water thing because she had that connection to her grandmother. She spoke to her grandmother, it seemed like, on a regular basis. And there was definitely, like, the love for her there.
Mm-hmm.
Aesthetically, cinematography, fucking great.
Yeah.
Like, you wouldn't, on the surface, you wouldn't think it would be that aesthetically pleasing. I keep saying aesthetically. What the fuck?
Because I said it.
But I say it a lot, dude. I know that's in my vocabulary a lot. It looked great. Like, you wouldn't think, because of the when it was shot, I guess, you know, it looked like that could have been Seattle. You know, just like rainy. There was nothing, you know what I mean? Does that make sense? It was just like sort of cloudy and like mm-hmm. dark in a certain way. And I thought, and I found the beauty, it was beautiful. Like, there's certain shots, like the shots where they're doing the little wake up stretching, where they're doing like ha ha, you know,
yeah.
they're doing all that stuff, and just certain shots that just really, like, I just found myself thinking like, oh, that's a fucking great shot, you know.
It was shot well. It was.
Anna Franquesa Solano, who's done, I don't know any of these movies except The Farewell.
You're talking about the cinematographer?
Yeah. She did something called Somewhere in the... Let's see. She shot a lot of stuff. Camera and electrical department. Wow, she's done... So she's a gaffer, assistant gaffer, cinematographer. She's got a lot of credits.
I've seen all her movies.
Wow, good for you.
I saw Buck Run. I saw Lucky Day. I saw Indiana.
You did?
No, none of them.
Okay. Oh, trying to be cool.
Trying to be fancy.
Yeah, she's done it. This Somewhere in the Middle looks like I've seen that advertisement.
Well, do you think it had a similar aesthetic to like Columbus? Like,
some
of those shots.
Did you actually think you saw Columbus?
I liked Columbus. I know you loved Columbus. I liked Columbus.
Well, that's the thing. Like, because Columbus, I'm glad you mentioned that and I didn't. So I like the fact that, you know, so Columbus, you just talk about like weather wise, you know, mm-hmm. that's summertime. It's bright. You see all these beautiful shots and then life happening in the you know what it is? Like they would have like in this one in Farewell, there would be these shots that look like master shots that were basically like master shots, but they didn't cut that much, you know?
Sure.
And it was just like, fuck, that's fucking great. I like how they just stayed on that shot and they let the scene happen. You know, like even like the part, like there's a part where Billy and her mom are talking, you know, the character's trying to find the earring that fell on the floor, and she and her, I don't think they cut in that scene, did they? And like her and her mom are like kind of arguing. She's like, I want to stay in China. Did they? Do you remember that?
I don't remember that.
Okay. Well, like it was like that scene. Like it was like stuff in the, is the foreground in the front? The foreground is the front, right?
Yes.
And then in the foreground, like her and her mother are like talking, and in the background, everybody else is like, they're having a serious conversation. In the background, everybody else is trying to find the fucking earring.
Yes.
And then the mom in the foreground finds it. Like, I just like that. Like, that's real shit. Like how, you know, this important conversation is happening. And then at the end, like that, you know, the juxtaposition of like the dramatic and humorous stuff going. And obviously that was a little more straightforward with the father being drunk in the bed and mom and Billy arguing, you know. Just some really good humorous moments. There are like a lot of laughs in the movie theater. Almost kind of played theatrically like a play in a lot of ways. I guess just being in that particular audience, you know. Yeah, it's just all around really good. But I didn't know that I was going to, as much as I appreciated the story and it was very compelling and all that, I didn't know that I was going to really like it aesthetically as much as I did. Like, I appreciated the cinematography.
Well, I thought of Columbus in a way, because Columbus had that very, like, yeah, kind of like the, like, what you said about, like, kind of, like, shots of, like, kind of the atmosphere. And what's, like, it was, like, the two of them. Like, this was more of a family story. Columbus was, like, the two of them. Mm-hmm. Or so, Haley Lou and... what's his name? John Cho. Ed Cho was a comic. I don't think he's around anymore. But it kind of reminded me a little of Columbus in that sense of kind of like the way it was shot. And it was kind of like this kind of small movie, but it's like the way it was captured. And it's so well done. And it's really like, it's one of the better things. I haven't seen too many things, but one of the better things I've seen this year. By far.
Yeah, I mean, and I kind of want to, even though you haven't seen that much, I mean, not to be cynical, but you're not really missing anything. Like, I saw Stuber last week, and I enjoyed it. Like, it's just, like, these movies, like...
Well, like, I don't think that's what we're talking about.
Know what I mean? Like, it's stuff like...
Is that the dog movie?
No, Stuber is Kumail and
the dog, right?
Dave Bautista. No, he's not. There's no dog
in it. Isn't there a dog in it?
No.
I thought there was a dog.
No, that you're talking about the joint with...
No, it's Stuber. It's like Kumail, the wrestler, and there's a dog always on the poster.
What?
Stuber.
I don't remember a dog.
Oh, man.
Sorry, dude. I saw it last week. I don't remember.
Stuber. Yeah, there's a dog in the... Look, right here. It's this big, like, pit bull mix between the two of them. Is he not? Did they cut him out of the movie?
I think so. Let me, Stuber, and there's a poster?
Yeah, the dog. Literally, the dog is always on the poster.
What the fuck?
I thought the dog was Stuber.
No, Stuber is Kumail. Like, his name is I'm forgetting his fucking name. I think his name is Stuart. And he drives... Oh yeah, there is a dog in it, but the dog isn't. Okay, yeah, I'm being. Damn, I started by saying I don't like animals. Animals. I didn't know. Notice the. That's fucked up.
You cut it out of your memory.
Full circle. Yeah, there's a dog in it, but it's not like, not all that much. You know, like that's a good movie. But when we're talking about like, now I'm being an asshole. We're talking about like award season stuff.
Dude, like, it's fun. Dude, it's fine. Kumail had big. Big Sick, which everyone respected.
Yeah,
that's not what he's going for. This movie's a paycheck, and I'm sure he likes it and thinks it's funny, but it's not like he's going for awards here.
Yeah,
the
I
big
think he
sick
had,
was.
And
the
I
big
think
sick he, was him doing that.
Yeah, I think he had some in the way that he was talking on. Like I was listening to him on The Frame, that podcast. And he was talking. He did have a lot of input in it, and he was trying to make a buddy cop movie that like this. Not you know, it's a big studio film. That has that's really interesting and it's funny. It's definitely yeah, it's the less that you know going into Stuber, the better it'll be for you. You know, like on the surface it's a buddy cop movie, but it's a little more than meets the eye to it, you know, it's a little more Transformer-esque. You know, but it's definitely a fun movie. But when we talk about like them trophies, I think you're going to see right now because you're going to have an onslaught coming soon, like within the next two, three months. You're going to see the onslaught of like Oscar bait movies and all that shit. So. We haven't seen anything yet. There's been stuff that's, you know, you kind of kill time looking at my ticket stubs from this AMC thing, this app. A24's got the three most, you know, we talked about three A24 films on this pod.
Yeah, they're distributing like. They'll win an Oscar. Well, they did. They won Moonlight. So I was going to say they'll win an Oscar soon. They already did.
Yeah.
I did not like Under the Silver Lake, which they distributed.
You were really hyped about that movie.
I was interested in it. And yeah. Getting pushback. And then it was, I thought, pretty incoherent kind of nonsense.
You owe me $7. Because I rented it online. No, it's on, I think now it's on Amazon Prime now.
Yeah, don't get the steel book of it.
No, I won't get the steel. But God, Ricky Lindholm. Oh my God.
Yeah, that was a fun scene.
For a skinny white woman, there's something a skinny woman in general, like there's something about her. She's a bad motherfucker, man.
Yeah.
And she's like 40, 41. Like it's just you know how they say like, you know, guy like, you know, dudes. What is it? They say women like they age out. Or she is. I don't want to be. You know. All right.
You don't want to get canceled.
I don't want to get canceled.
You're appreciating her.
I appreciate her. She's a lovely woman. She's a bad motherfucker, man. Something about her that she should be working more.
Yes, she could have done the Florence Pugh role.
You think so?
No, I don't know. I don't know. Who could say?
I don't know.
I don't think there's anything else that I saw that I really liked. I said Booksmart was fun.
Yeah, I like that too. Yeah, that's definitely one that I would add to the collection. Like a lot of people try to say, you know, that you can't compare it to Superbad, but it's similar. Two high school kids.
Oh my God, it was Superbad.
Yeah,
it was the exact same fucking movie, just like girls doing it.
Yeah, woke
you
Superbad.
You had the aggressive. Chubby girl who was like overbearing to the one who was like the Michael Cera character.
Yeah.
And then they go to a party. You have the like one of them getting arrested. It's in Superbad as McLovin that this girl gets arrested.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was the same playbook and that's fine. It was funny.
Yeah. Some people say, don't you fucking say that it's like Superbad.
Why do people get so mad at that?
It
was clearly Superbad. You're watching it. You're like, this is the same two characters, the same kind of idea. Superbad, he was mad that he's going to go away to college and he didn't tell him.
Yeah.
And this was like, wasn't it the same fucking thing that she's going to college or like, I forget what it was.
One was going to, I guess, one was going to an Ivy League. The other one was taking like a gap year or something.
She was
going
to go away to like, some Nepal and like
help kids like, or something.
Yeah, yeah. So she was upset. The same idea. They're going away. How you didn't tell me? It was the same fucking idea.
Yeah.
People got very mad at that like Superbad thing, and it was like, you can like both. It's fine. It's enough time has passed that it's like this is a different take, and but it was the same. It was the same like structure.
Because it made me rewatch Superbad, and I was like, "Yeah, it's like Superbad, a little more heart, a lot less dicks,
Yeah.
Way less dicks." And I was happy for that. I didn't mind that, you know, like those drawings of dicks that he did. You know, it was shit. Yeah, I don't know why people get upset about that, and people were getting upset that that movie didn't beat Aladdin. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Aladdin.
Film critics that I respected, that one of them could not fathom. It's just hard for me to get over that shit. Could not fathom.
Couldn't fathom that it's like Superbad?
She couldn't fathom that it was like that people were going to see Aladdin and not Booksmart. Like,
but it's different crowds.
Yeah, it's like you see all these brown people that want to feel represented, that see like a fucking brown Aladdin and Jasmine and shit, and yeah, they're gonna want to see that. And a nerd like me, a person like me, I saw two. That was Memorial Day weekend. What the fuck do you think most people are gonna go see on that holiday? They're gonna see Aladdin. They're gonna see Will Smith. You know,
I want to see his take on the genie.
Yeah. I want to see. I was excited to see Booksmart. Olivia Wilde was like somebody like me is going to go see that. And then I went to see Brightburn right after.
Is that good?
I liked it. It's interesting. It kind of makes you want a little more from it, because the way it ends is just kind of like, well, what are you going to do? How are you going to beat that guy? You know. So I don't know. Oh, this is something else. Since we're talking about this, let's see. We can end on this.
What happened?
Well, there's another. Look, it's on Twitter. So this guy, do you know Dan Perlman?
Yeah.
So he tweets, a comedian made a joke. People like James Davis directed hate at her. I'm assuming that's Dina. Dina, come on the show.
Yes, that's what they're talking about.
And she's been getting nonstop death threats with her family's address and phone number put on. What the fuck? Maybe he can say something. And then the homie Jordan Temple, also a friend of the podcast, say something, James Davis. You sound cop adjacent. What you did was fuckery. This woman is getting harassed. Cop.
I don't doubt she's getting harassed, man. I mean, the people who like this stuff, like, they're insane. And it's like fun to them to just be like, ha ha. And like, people dox other people. It's fucking scary. That's the thing where it's like online is not just this like thing where it's just like, oh, just log off and go about your day, because you're getting fucking doxed. And it's fucking insane that people do that. It's crazy. And I'm sorry Dina has to go through that.
Yeah.
That sucks. I don't know her too well. I always thought she was really funny, and whether she's funny or not, even if she's not, and it was a poor choice of jokes, which it wasn't, nobody fucking deserves it. Nobody ever deserves this shit.
Yeah, she's just a funny comic, and
if you're
bullshit.
A comic who does that, come on, man. This guy, James Davis, I don't know him, but it's like, come on, man. I'm sure you've made jokes that maybe people didn't like. Like, what are you so, why would you do this? Why would you, like, oh, I don't like that she made this joke. How could it's like?
Now I want to know what he said.
He took it down. It's not there.
Well, somebody's gonna. I kind of want to get.
I know. Once it's up forever.
Yeah.
Someone screenshots it, and
Because this shit, I didn't know about all this stuff happening. Yeah. Because
I think she had to deactivate her Instagram because she was getting so harassed. And then you know what people do? People harass you, and then. Either you go like private for a little while on Facebook or Twitter or whatever, and then people are like, "Oh, blame the victim. You can't take it." It's like,
yeah,
come on. It's like, what are you doing here? They're doing that just to like stop it. Like Dina was not like, "Fuck this guy. He died." Like that's how crazy it is.
Yeah,
it's like She made a joke. You like it or you don't. Goes back to, again, my film gets into this stuff of people just getting upset. Like Allison Leiby, friend of the podcast.
Yes.
I don't know.
She's a friend of Twitter. She's one of my friends on Twitter.
Fellow Marylander. Yeah, she did a joke and people got upset and she talks about it. Like, it was a pretty innocuous joke about gun control and people got upset about it. It wasn't like, but in that case, it wasn't like they were upset at the joke. They want to be upset at a woman. They want to be fuck you.
Yeah.
Fuck you, you stupid fucking cunt. Fuck you. And it's like, they're just angry. It just gives them an excuse, you know? I think these kids are like, I think it's kids who are doing it. And they're just like, how dare you talk about him? I'm going to show you how tough I am and fuck you. So I think it's a little different, but it's a similar idea.
Yeah.
This is insane. It's completely insane. We're so fucked with social media. And it has some good, but it has so much bad of this, of how people, they like really can't think for themselves. And they just like, are like, it's just such a mob mentality.
Yeah, it's fucking crazy. Now people are trying to cancel. Some people say cancel James.
She'll ultimately be fine. This will blow over it there.
I hope so.
But it's very annoying.
What the fuck?
So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, just hopefully nothing happens.
She'll hopefully be fine. No weirdo shows up at one of her shows. This is the thing. Comics are like very out there in the public. We put our shows out and it's like someone could show up, you know? It's crazy.
All for defending a guy that,
didn't he beat his girlfriend?
Yeah, he did.
So it's like defending Chris Brown. It's like he has so many fans that are like, anytime you bring it up, or even the Michael Jackson people, that if you tweet about the movie or you write about anything, they go crazy. And it's like, he's obviously a fucking weirdo who did stuff with kids. You don't have a lock on your door.
Right.
They'll be like, oh, well, he was proven innocent. And it's like, first of all, you know, the justice system doesn't always work. Second of all, these kids were defending him we're now saying why they defended him.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
Yeah.
You use any common sense, you know that he was a fucking pedophile. Like, he locked the door. Why would you have an alarm system on your door if you're not doing weird shit?
Yeah.
It's as simple as that.
It's just fucked up that other comedians calling somebody out for a
joke.
That's fucking...
This guy, James Davis, it's inexcusable to do that.
Yeah.
Inexcusable. I mean, you don't like a joke, whatever. Roll up, dude.
Yeah.
But he's got a big band. No, that's like, apparently he was the one, and it probably was under the radar, and then he did it, like, to like, oh, this comic tweeted, how could you? And that probably blew it up, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's what it seems to be, the source.
Yeah. There's no one could, New York comics are...
All right, whatever.
All right, well...
Dude, it's good talking to you.
Yeah, man. As always, man. So go see The Farewell. Go see Midsommar. Go see, more importantly, though, go see Tasteless. August 27th. Will this be
it'll be on demand. Like,
okay.
I don't know where yet. Like, it'll probably be on Amazon and iTunes, Apple, whatever it's called now. Apple. I think it's Apple TV.
Whenever you tweet
Voodoo.
It, just tweet it all out. I'll retweet it, you know, whenever
it
happens.
I'll probably find out in a week or two what it's exactly going to be on. But it'll be to buy or rent on August 27th. Through Virgil Films.
Awesome, man.
Cool, man. It's great talking to you.
Always a pleasure, man. Thank you so much. Hold on to the line.
Okay.
Thanks so much, everybody, for listening. I appreciate you. And we'll talk to you next time. Take it easy, everybody.